that's what I'm missing. I knew I was missing something. Ready for this?
Hold up. Boom. Turn that shit off.
We got like one of those for Ellie where we just put it and she just watches the pretty lights.
I've had one for like years in preparation, but obviously she's never really used it. But look, see how much different it makes, like that background?
Yeah, it looks cool.
Adds a whole bunch, a whole different layer.
Looks like it's coming off the TV.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do, is just try to make different setups. So you can see the light here. That does nothing, actually.
I mean, eventually, if you earn enough money, you can just make the fucking green. You can get a green screen.
I don't want a green screen. No, this is way cooler than a green screen.
True, it does look cooler.
Yeah.
It looks raw as fuck compared to a green screen.
Yeah, especially like most people's like podcast sets.
But then again, you could have a podcast at the Statue of Liberty. Just blow a fucking fan. Just blow a fucking fan and make it look like the Statue of Liberty. Or we're in fucking Paris. Just be like,
we're here in Paris, France.
You know, yeah,
you're on the Eiffel Tower.
Not gonna lie, guys, you've done a really good job here, but what about the Statue of Liberty, though?
We're here on the Eiffel Tower. As you can hear the wind in the background, please try to ignore it. We'll edit it out as best as we can.
That
is not a fan.
I mean, this is... I guess it's not the Eiffel Tower, but it's still pretty cool, I'd say.
No, it is wrong. It is wrong. I gotta admit it. It's wrong.
That's the one thing I'll have to warn you of, is my speech is declining due to my seizures and my meds.
Okay.
So if I ever stutter or get stuck, just know. That's why. Okay. Sometimes it takes me a second.
If it's, like, too bad, I can always just edit something out. If it feels like...
It takes me, like, a good, like, 30 seconds to a minute. That's fine. It.
Yeah, I guess that's the cool thing, because we're not live.
No, there's certain words that, like, don't make sense to me. Like, anything ending in ing, for some reason, does not register correctly.
Ing?
Yes. Like, thing. Like, how it sounds normal to, like, a normal person.
The
to
word thing?
Anything ending in ing, like getting or doing. Sometimes I have a hard time pronouncing it, but for some reason in my brain, it just does not sound right.
That I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I'm having issues with, like, not only my own speech, but also registering speech.
Okay.
And, like the little voice that you hear in your head,
yeah,
it is, like, it either goes completely blank for me,
okay,
or it overloads to where it's, like, fucking 50 voices at once, and I can't focus on one, and I'm just like, bro, what the fuck was I talking about?
Was it like that before the seizure started?
No. The doctor said there definitely was some damage done to my brain because of the seizures. The seizures, I have focal epilepsy. And the area that they're coming from,
okay,
is actually the control center of the brain. It controls, like, your language, your thinking, your reasoning, things like that.
Okay.
And the bad part is, and memory, and the bad part is my meds also affect that. But it's like, if I don't take the meds, I just seize out and die. So it's kind of like...
That's crazy. Well, how long were you having the seizures before they were finally able to diagnose it and get you on the correct medication?
2.5 years. But even now, wow, I'm still on the same meds, just on an increased dose.
Okay.
Because the doctor... My seizures...
2.5 years is crazy.
Every seizure I have is basically like a grand mal seizure. Every seizure almost I have is full-blown convulsing. Like, the last one I had, I actually didn't even see it coming. I went to go sit up to get out of bed to go get a drink of water. Next thing I wake up to is the paramedics coming into my room, and I can't see out on my right eye. I actually fell between the wall and the nightstand is where I fell. And
from Lex off the bed?
Yeah. And Lex had to, like, how try to pull me.
How far is that?
I was, like, on the very edge, like this. And then the nightstand is, like, right here. And then the wall is close.
Okay.
And, like, I fell kind of diagonally between. So Lex had to pull me out and then give me the rescue drug, my nasalum, that shoot up the nose. And she had to give me that to kind of pull me out of the seizure. But I remember I woke up, I seen the paramedics, I couldn't even see out of my right eye.
Okay, so the nasal thing, and I know that's relatively recently as compared to when everything started, right?
Yes, that is what my new neurologist gave
me. So this happened recently then?
Yes. I actually started seeing a new neurologist beginning in February because I went a year without a seizure, and then I had 2 seizures within like a 2-month period. Like,
yeah, that's
bad seizures, like, okay, grand mal seizures.
Okay.
So I ended up seeing a new neurologist. I actually go to main campus Cleveland Clinic now.
Okay.
And he
and what was different was he
on all my meds.
I remember you switched doctors in the past, right? And so this neurologist, was he like kind of recommended, or was it just a different? How was that?
He specializes because none of the doctors, like my past doctors, all of them said, "Oh no, you don't have epilepsy." Literally, very first test that he did.
You're having seizures left and right, and it's very clear that they're seizures, right?
But they don't. They.
But they're like. But you don't have epilepsy.
They were all saying we don't know what's causing it.
And, you know, I understand that some people can have seizures sometimes, like, away from epilepsy. Yeah, but they don't. My dog was drinking his drink. That's what you get for leaving it on the floor.
You're going to have a fun time.
Okay, so I understand that people can have seizures for a bunch of different reasons, right? But if you're consistently having them back to back, are there any other conditions that would consistently cause them for an extended period of time?
For a long time, they just had me listed as non-epileptic intractable seizures of unknown reasons.
What? That sounds crazy. That sounds like
for more than 2 years. The very
that
first
just sounds
test,
a fancy way of saying patients having seizures. We don't know why.
Basically, yes. The very first test that this new doctor did, he immediately recognized the uneven brain waves and where they were coming from. And he was immediately able to diagnose me. And the way he put it, like, he said there's different forms of seizures. Like, he said that the brain is affected in different ways. And he gave me, like, different ways. Like, he dumbed it down for me. Because, of course, I don't know what this, you know, shit means.
Of course, yeah. So like, you were all new to this at the time.
So he said, like, there's types of seizures. He said, well, compare your brain to a parking lot. He said there's types of seizures where the cars aren't parked in spaces. Nothing is in order. He said then there's seizures where all the cars are parked in the right places, but things are still kind of wrong. He compared mine to all the cars are parked in parking spots and everything is even, but the parking spots are assigned and no cars are parked in their correct spots. And he said that's kind of what's causing my seizures. Wow. He said the neurons on my brain aren't going to the right places.
That sounds scary. Because, like, what do you do about something like that? If your brain just starts sending information to the wrong parts of your body, there's nothing you can do to, like, work on that or exercise that.
Yeah. So I'm just on high doses of... I'm actually above the recommended dosage of Keppra. I'm currently on the highest dosage of Vimpat. Wow. He gave me a benzo to try to keep me, like, calm and, like, keep the brain calm. And then he gave me the Nasalem in case I do have a seizure to shoot up my nose. Now, the Nasalem did work. Now, Lex had a hard time pulling me all out because she had to pull me out from between the wall and the nightstand to be able to shoot the Nasalem in my nose.
Jesus.
And literally the whole right side of my face was completely bruised and swollen. Like, for the first day, I couldn't even open my eye. And then the second day, when I went to go open my eye, like, I was trying to open my eye and I couldn't open it, even though I knew it was ready to open. So I, like, had to wash my eye again, and my eye was actually glued shut from blood. When I opened my eye, there was no white in my eye whatsoever.
Oh, my God, man.
There was zero white in my eye.
What in the world?
So far from that, I had a hematoma on the side of my head from that last seizure. From the one seizure where I fell, I still have the shoulder fracture because they haven't been able to do surgery. Which I'm out of the sling, thankfully, in my right shoulder.
How long were you in a sling?
Fucking like 2-3 months. And they were just trying. Because, like, the shoulder injury happened before I got the official diagnosis.
Okay.
And they said without an official diagnosis, they didn't know what medications they could use to put me under.
Yeah.
And they didn't know how much medication they could use to put me under because they said the correct way to fix it is through surgery. Because I don't have, like, full mobility in my shoulder.
Okay. Wow.
Like, I can, like, lift.
They're saying, okay, so due to a seizure, now you have a fracture in your shoulder that says that the only way to fix it is through surgery. What kind of surgery? Like, they're going to have to...
I think they got to put, like, a little plate.
God, man. So, all right. So, starting about what did we say, about 3 years ago now this started happening?
About three and a half.
Three and a half. And so obviously ever since, because I remember, man, we were...
No, it actually, it's going to be on 4 years now because it started 2 years before I met Lex. And me and Lex have been together for 2.5 years now.
Wow, okay.
Going on three.
So probably over like 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So this all started changing your life. You can't focus on pretty much anything now because you're how often were you having them at your peak?
Multiple times a month. And even now on the meds, they're still considered uncontrolled. Like, my doctor does not consider my meds controlled, or my seizures controlled.
Yeah.
That's why he said that I'm not eligible for working, driving, anything like that.
So now...
He said, unfortunately, he said that even with... Because he said that on as high a dose of medications that I'm on and as many medications that I'm on, for a normal person, they wouldn't have to worry about it. But he said, because I'm still having seizures, not as often, but here and there, that it's just too dangerous. And also the level of violence that my seizures are. Because my seizures aren't just like me tightening up a little bit or kind of passing out. My seizures are full-blown, like, fall down, convulsing on the floor. You know, I can fall, hit my head, do anything. That's how I've gotten injured multiple times. It's because I've just been walking normal, and then, boom, seizure, fall down, and that's it. And then I wake up either in an ambulance or...
So I have some experience with some epileptics in the past in my family. And they aren't able to tell when they're happening ahead of time. We have to know by just how they're acting and their facial expressions. And that's how we're able to tell. But they can't communicate with us. How quickly... Do yours when you're feeling normal, like you said, walking down the street? At what point? How long would it take for a seizure to kick in, and you're already on the floor convulsing? Are you able to communicate that to us? Are you able to?
No, I just wake up in the back of the ambulance, or as the paramedics are loading me onto the ambulance.
Oh, that's scary, man.
There's no communicating. There's no nothing. I literally just either wake up, like I said, in the ambulance, or as they're getting ready to load me up, like helping me up off the ground to carry, like, basically, like, help me outside, walk me outside.
That's insane, man. Okay, so no communication, it just happens. Obviously, your life must be taking a big turn at this point.
It definitely is, especially because, like I said, like, I went a full year seizure-free. We thought they were all cleared up, and then unfortunately they began again. And my doctor said the unfortunate part is when you have intractable epilepsy, he said that they either will have to keep raising medications or I will have to possibly start new medications later on in life. But I have to see him multiple times a year.
I got this little guy here. I'm trying to listen.
I know.
Like I said, I can't keep him out of the set. Because if he's left on the other side of the gate, he'll bark, and then you'll just hear him nonstop.
He'll be whiny.
And I'm sure they would love to see him. Okay.
Drinking my drink.
Actually, let's put a pin in that, and let's introduce our guest here. This is a close friend of mine, someone I've known coming up on almost 6 years now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, almost. Wow, you bite him, he might punch you.
You know, I'll hit a dog. I don't want to, but I will if I have to. It's been good since 2019, early 2019.
Yeah, like 2019. We've known each other for about almost 6 years now. And I remember when these all started happening. There was a time in our lives where we were hanging out very consistently, but obviously jobs take us in different directions. We're busy all the time. Relationships. And then the biggest thing is when I know when a lot of this started happening for you was when I was going through my pregnancy. me and my daughter's mom were expecting, and so now I'm busy during that. All right, so then fast forward now, I want to talk about your pregnancy. Right, and we talked about it a little bit before, but I want to be able to understand this full story because I know. Like, pregnancies are a big deal. Like, there's so much work that goes into taking care of the mother and from our side. And obviously, the mothers are just so much just trying to take care of their own health, their own mental psyche.
Mm-hmm.
But walk me through, how was her pregnancy?
It was rough. The first trimester, she was sick basically every day. And my days basically were spent, like, taking care of her, trying to help her, you know, do the things that I could. Second trimester wasn't awful, but then she started with swelling and her blood pressure started going up. And then by third trimester, she was having a lot of issues with the swelling and the blood pressure and things like that. And then eventually she had to be induced.
You said the nausea was only during the first trimester?
Yeah, I mean, she had it through the other trimesters, but not too bad. The first trimester, she was puking every day, multiple times a day. There's nothing in there anymore.
Is she just playing with the cup?
Yeah. There you go. You can't have the...
Stop.
Yeah, the first trimester is when she really had issues with... She was puking every day. Like, yeah. Just not... It was daily. I mean, she would get, like, 2 or 3 hours of, like, non-puking, and then it was just back to puking again.
Because I remember my daughter's mom having very bad nausea throughout the entirety of the pregnancy. Every morning, I'd have to wake up to go grab some food and have a Sprite or ginger ale ready before she'd wake up. I was up at like 7 in the morning. I went, brushed my teeth, did my basic routine in the morning, ran out to grab her food. So by the time she's waking up for work, I already have breakfast ready for her, because if she didn't have food in her stomach right away, she was going to be throwing up before work. Mm-hmm. And this was like the entirety.
That was the only good part about the pregnancy for me, is that I was still able to do things.
Okay.
Because during the pregnancy, that's when I was seizure free for a year.
Wow. So it's like your body kind of locked in.
Yeah, kind of. It was almost like, not really that my body knew, but kind of just luck.
Okay. For sure.
And like, the third trimester, by then, it was just high blood pressure, constantly being monitored, because we did midwives.
Okay.
We had midwives.
Okay.
There was a total of 5. It was just depending on the day of who was there. And I remember the one night we went in because she had a high blood pressure. They didn't count it. They checked it off their machine, and sure enough, it was a high blood pressure. And they told her, if we have one more, we're going to induce you.
Okay.
All through the night, everything was going okay. Morning
comes. So when did you get the call? You said at night?
We actually would call them and tell them, like, her blood pressure was high, and we would have to go to the hospital.
You're checking yourself at home?
Monitored. The midwife would meet us.
The midwife is coming to your house.
And she would triage us.
Okay.
And, no, not even to the house. She would meet us at the hospital and triage us at the hospital.
Oh, okay.
Whichever midwife it was. There was a total of 5 of them. Okay. They were all nice. I can't complain about any of them. Well, okay. One was kind of annoying, but the others were great.
4 out of 5 is still pretty impressive.
Yes.
Why was the one annoying?
Because Lex had to be on her mental health meds.
Sure.
And she said all the baby could withdraw from those meds, things like that. And she wanted Lex off the meds. The other 4 midwives disagreed. They said taking her off her meds was too dangerous. And if she wasn't healthy mentally during the pregnancy, that was a lot worse than the meds themselves. So 4 out of 5 midwives were like, we need her on the meds. While the one midwife was like, oh, we need her off. It could affect the baby. Which none of the meds affected the baby. She came out. She didn't have any issues.
So she was wrong?
The medications. Yes, the one midwife was wrong. She was the annoying one. The other 4 were correct. It was a good idea to keep her on the meds.
Okay.
And... they were all great, but yeah, the one night we called them, because we had to check her blood pressure at home, we called them and we told them, like, look, she had high blood pressure. And they're like, okay, meet us at the hospital, we'll triage you, we'll be there. And they had a separate floor, one for mothers that are there with, like, dealing with issues with the baby, and then the birthing floor, of course, we did it at Fairview Hospital. Shout out to Fairview, you guys did mostly good. We met the midwife there. She checked the blood pressure. Sure enough, it was high. So she told us if Lex had another blood pressure, I can't remember, within the certain time limit, then they would have to keep her and induce her, which we were not hoping for. We got almost to the end where we could have gone home. And then the last blood pressure they took, too high. Boom, had to keep us and induce her.
What do you mean by you almost got to the end?
Where we were almost out of the time limit, because it's too high blood pressures within a time limit when you have preeclampsia. too high blood pressures within a certain time limit, they have to start inducing you. Because at that point, it's becoming dangerous to your baby, the baby's health and the mother's health. Because her blood pressures are like in the 160s.
So then you get both of them. And... sorry. He's being a lot right now. So you get two blood pressure tests that are too high. And so now you're forced to go to the hospital, right? That's what the midwives are telling you?
Well, we were already at the hospital. At the time.
Okay, you're already at the hospital. And so they're telling you that you have to...
be induced. And then they moved us to a different floor. They moved us to the actual birthing floor. Lex was in labor for, what was it, like 58 hours.
Oh, that's rough. Wow. Was she like pushing for 58 hours?
She was just in active labor.
Wow.
And then they finally broke her water. They actually broke her water themselves. And then after they break your water, you only have a certain amount of time before to give birth or else they do a C-section. Lex only had a couple hours left or else they were going to do a C-section. Wow. And she finally pushed and gave birth. But if a baby is born at 35 weeks or above, they can go home with the parents. Ellie was born at 34 weeks, 6 days.
6 days?
Yeah, 34 weeks, 6 days. She was 1 day away from
being able to go home. 1 day short? And so now, okay, so you're saying they can come home with the parents if they're 35 weeks.
Yes.
Okay, what happens if you're short?
They sent her to the NICU.
Okay, and how long does she have to stay?
It was kind of chaotic. So she was in the emergency NICU for a couple days. The one thing that we're thankful for, and I feel bad for other parents, is when she was on that NICU floor, she was the healthiest baby there by far.
Wow.
There were so many babies there.
That's that terrifying. Were in
horrible shape. I remember a little baby there, and I remember his name named Edward. Edward was like 2 pounds. He had heart issues.
2 pounds?
He literally had a hole in his ear. Like on the inside of his ear, where your ear's supposed to be. They don't even know how that happened. They seen it. Then when they tried to put these bandages on him, for some reason the bandages melted to his skin.
What?
They don't know. He had so many issues wrong with him that it was not funny. Every baby in the NICU has, in the emergency NICU, has a nurse.
Wow.
Edward had like 3 nurses watching him.
At 24/7, basically.
All the babies are monitored 24/7, but he had so many issues that the nurses had to discuss what to do to handle certain issues.
Wow.
I remember that there was a point where they called in the doctor, and even the doctor was like, I've never seen this before. You had 3 registered nurses and a doctor trying to figure out what to do with this poor kid. So that kind of, at that point, made me thankful, like, yes, Ellie's in the NICU, but she's not in that condition or that shape.
Yeah, sometimes you have to look at it like that. Yeah, you have to.
And then within a few days, she was moved up to basically like a go-home NICU, like, which you're supposed to go home. But we had constant issues there. That's where our biggest issue was. Because every time we talked to them, she was eating, she was doing the things she was supposed to do. But every time we talked to them, there was something different. We'd ask them, when can she go home? The night doctors will be like, well, the morning doctors have to decide that. We'd come in the morning. Can she come home now? The morning doctors will be like, well, that's for the night doctors to decide. Then we'd come back in at night.
What's this ring around they're doing?
It was literally a ring around for multiple days. Then they said that she had an incident where her heart rate spiked. But an incident is only supposed to count if the staff has to interfere. The staff did not have to interfere with her, but they still counted it as an incident.
Did they say they had to interfere, or?
They admitted that they did not have to interfere. The nurse said she did not have to interfere.
So why did they have to count it?
So even the nurse admitted that it shouldn't have been counted.
Did they say why they had to count it as an incident?
They did not give us a good answer, no. That's why I lowered their score.
I don't mean to laugh. Okay, so then...
So finally she was doing everything right. She's eating good. No more incidents, no more nothing. Then comes the day to take her home. The day that we come in, she has to do 2 feedings, eating a certain amount, and the car seat test. The first feeding, they give us the bottle. She had already just ate, and they said they couldn't count that feeding. because we weren't there for that feeding. So they expected her next feeding for her to just eat. She was eating like 60 milliliters or 30 milliliters at the time, 40 milliliters.
That seems pretty normal.
She had already ate 30 or 40 milliliters.
Oh, so she's full.
And an hour later, they want her to eat another 30 or 40. And then 4 hours later, they want her to eat
another. And they're judging based on how much she eats of that.
Yes, what percentage. But so, they had just fed her.
So how much did she drink?
The second first time feeding, she drank like 10, and I admit I poured out some because I was angry. Because it's like, why would you feed her knowing that we have to do this test to bring her home? And you can't count it.
So you have, she needs to drink a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, because she already drank,
she wasn't hungry
anymore. She wasn't hungry anymore. So now she's being forced to drink again, which is fine drinking again. But if she doesn't drink a certain amount, they're going to say that she has to stay longer.
Another day or two.
Another day or two. And so you take it upon yourself
to pour out. I snuck the bottle away and I poured out the amount that she needed to drink because I knew she wasn't hungry. I knew she already drank. She had drank a full bottle already before we got there.
Were the nurses in the room or did you wait till them leave the room? Or
they were literally two seats over from me and I still snuck the bottle away and poured it out. And then was able to get it back to the baby without the nurse noticing.
My baby's on her fine. Computer. Chill out.
And then sure enough, her next feeding, she ate more than what was required.
So she was good, like you said. You already knew.
The car seat test, she passed perfectly. We knew she was ready to go home.
So how long at this days, point after since she was born?
16 days in the NICU.
Oh, my gosh.
They gave her an extra 5 days because of the incident.
Yeah.
But with
5 days for that incident?
Yeah.
For the blood pressure incident?
Yes.
But they didn't do anything. So why did they have to wait 5 days?
Because the nurse, I guess, accidentally put it down as an intervention. And it wasn't an actual intervention. And the nurse admitted that she didn't need to intervene.
So, okay, if they accidentally put it down, in the 5 days they didn't realize that it was an accident of what they inputted?
They said that it was already down as an incident. They said that they can't change that. It was just a runaround. I started getting extremely frustrated. Like, every day.
You're frustrating me now. I don't get it. So, like, at what point did they realize, oh, I just misclicked. But now that I misclicked, you're stuck here for 5 more days.
Literally the same day. We thought we were supposed to take her home the next day. We came prepared to take her home. And literally...
So you're expecting by like day 11? Yeah. Or okay, so...
Yeah, we're showed up there. We're ready to go. We're ready to take her home. We got her car seat. We got her to go home clothes.
Awesome.
We have her everything.
You're excited.
And then they're like, yeah, she had an incident last night. She can't go home.
Okay. Okay. You guys weren't there at this point. When did you guys leave?
We were only allowed to stay during Lex's recovery. And I think they let us stay for, 3 more days? So we were only at the hospital for 3 of the 13 days that she was in the NICU. Wow. The rest of the time, we just had to drive back and forth.
You couldn't ask me to leave. No. I couldn't leave if... If my daughter was actually born, like the most I'm going is to the cafeteria. Other than that, I'm not leaving the hospital. They're going to have to drag me out of there.
Yeah, that we were not allowed to stay.
That's insane. They're telling you go, but your baby can't go?
Yes.
Is that a thing?
Yes, that is a real thing.
Your baby's there and you're not allowed to stay?
Yes, that is a very real thing. They checked Lex out and everything. Like they gave her go home paperwork and told her like
you got to go. Come back during visiting hours?
Yes.
What? That doesn't seem right to me.
The only good thing is that visiting hours were 24/7. And they did have this cool little app on the phone where they have cameras on the babies. And you can go on the camera and watch your baby. It's called Angel Watch. It was a thing. But the crappy part is, they don't even tell parents about Angel Watch. They have to ask. Our nurse told us. They're like, ask about the Angel Watch because the nurses down there won't tell you. And sure enough, when I went down there, because Lex, she had to recover after she gave birth.
Of course.
So for the first
day.
It's
a lot going on.
Because she was on so much magnesium and stuff like that. Due to her high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Her first day, she could not go see Ellie. So the first day, I went down there.
Okay. So this is like day. This is like day 4 now because you guys were there for 3 days.
Yeah. Sure enough, the nurse, every nurse we had was nice except for the nurse from the first day. The nurse from the very first day was the only rude nurse. Every other nurse, nice. Okay. Every nurse who we went to go visit, super nice.
Okay. And then they do tell you about Angel, or did you already know about Angel Watch?
Before I went down, one of the nurses told me about it.
Before you went down? To go see Okay.
Ellie, because she was on the NICU floor.
That sounds amazing.
And sure enough,
I guess I wasn't told about this because we left with Jolene 2 days after she was born.
Yeah, and sure enough, I went down there. Not a single person told me about the Angel Watch. So I had to go to the front desk and ask them about it. And they're like, oh, yeah.
That just seems like something that should clearly be stated like ahead of time, especially for parents who have to wait and they're not sure if their kid is okay or not.
Yeah, they did not tell me that. I had to ask them. If it was not for the kind nurse that we had, I would have never have known about it. Wow. I literally waited to see if they would tell me anything, and then before I left the NICU to go back up to check on Lex, I went to the front desk and I was like, what is this Angel Watch? And then the lady at the front desk helped me set it up so that way we could watch Ellie at any point 24/7 on the camera.
So that was the only good thing. Thank God for that first nurse then, yeah. Yeah, that definitely would help out a lot. But even still, man, just to be separated for, what, 10 days?
Yeah.
10 days? Oh, no. I literally couldn't, man. There's no way they'd be able to get me out. They'd have to escort me.
And then it was like...
They're dragging me out of there.
And then it was like each day that went by, I was getting madder and madder and more frustrated.
Heck, I would too. Yeah, I don't blame you at all. That's frustrating me, and I'm not even there.
The only good thing that I'll admit is that the NICU nurses were all amazing. Every NICU nurse that we talked to, that we dealt with, every single one was great.
So she was born at 34 weeks, 6 days. How old is she now?
She is now 7 months. More than 7 months.
7 months. How is she doing?
She's perfect. She's actually taller than most girls her age. She's perfect in weight.
So even because, like, obviously she's not a regular 7-month-old baby because she's early. So she's more like 6 months-ish because she just should have been in the womb for another month. Right. So then.
But she caught up in size and everything.
And so now she's even taller. Because that's crazy because you're not even that tall.
I know.
And Lex isn't that tall.
I know. But she's a tall girl. She's when we went, she was 3.5 inches longer than the average baby her size.
Wow, 3.5 inches?
Yes.
All right, so now she's healthy now.
Yes.
She's happy. 7 months. She walking or crawling?
She moves around. When we put her in her little walker thing, she zooms. She's gone. She takes off. And she's figured out she knows how to turn around now and move around.
It gets scary when they start to get mobile, man. Like I said, my daughter now is, Jolene is 1 year and 10 months. So she's going to be 2 in a couple months here. Once they start running, man, it's a whole different world. They're zooming through the world.
And it depends. When we bring her to our house, she runs her walker into Selena with no care in the world. She don't care.
Your dog.
She runs into the dog.
Yeah. No care?
At the house. Yeah. And the dog, she just accepts it. She just takes the hit and then just keeps on moving. When we're at the house, she tries to run the cats over. At Lex's house, she tries to run the cats over.
So everything you've kind of been dealing with over the last few years with, like, seizures and stuff, going through the pregnancy, not even sure if your kid was going to be healthy or not. And, like, obviously, you know she's not dying, but, like, you still are just like, what's going on? Like, because they're giving you mixed information.
Yeah, they were basically saying, hey, talk to the night doctors. And then the night doctors are saying, talk to the morning doctors. And the morning doctors are saying, talk to the night doctors. And it's like, why can't one of you just give us the information? Why are you just passing this back and forth?
Right. That's scary, man. But everything's working out now, then.
Yes. It's definitely been, I should say, like a different sort of year. It's even weird because, like, I can't just be left alone with my daughter because of the seizures. Like, I can't just have, like, a daddy-daughter time or daddy-daughter day.
God, that's devastating.
It's like I have to be monitored simply because if I have a seizure, then what happens? Who's going to take care of her?
Oh, my God, that's devastating. I don't even have words for that, man. That's so sad.
So it's like even then, Lex is just... you know, stuck 24/7 because she can't go anywhere unless her mom comes or my mom comes. You know, she can't go anywhere because she has to be with us 24/7 just in case. Especially after the last seizure, with how bad it was, it's kind of put a little bit of fear in her.
Obviously, I've known about these seizures for a long time, but I never even thought about that as being that big of an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, my time, my alone time with my daughter is, like, the greatest time in the world. Mm-mm. Wow, man. Yeah. Wow.
So as of right now, I can't work, drive, or, like I said, even just have alone time with my daughter. So it's definitely been...
challenging.
Yes. And kind of like a wake-up call, too.
Okay.
Because I've always been, despite my fluffiness now...
Fluffiness?
Definitely grown fluffy.
I've heard they're called dad bods.
Yeah, I've definitely grown dad bod and out of shape. But just even simple things like just learning to be more calm and less arrogant. Because not only for my daughter, but just because myself. Because I can't be out here fighting people and stuff anymore. I take a punch to the head.
I will say, he's been a fighter for a long time. I've known this guy for about a good 6 years now. What I can say about him is that he's ready for the smoke 24/7.
And it's just like, I can't be that way anymore. It's just...
Yeah, man, they really do change you. We're both easily very confident men. Always been labeled as arrogant to like certain people who probably don't know us as well as we know each other, right? But
I know there's definitely people that have complained about your arrogance to me, and probably vice versa. I know that for a fact. There's definitely people that are like, "Why are you friends with Naz?" And it's like, why not? What has he done wrong to you? Does his confidence hurt your feelings that fucking much? Like, really? You're that upset because he's just confident? Man, I'm sorry you hurt your feelings.
What I can say is, man, our kids are probably the first... my daughter's probably the first thing in my life that... the first time in my life that I've ever really doubted myself. Right? Because, yeah, I've been pretty confident. Hey, chill out. I've always been pretty confident in my life. Not about just being cocky, just more about I'm just happy no matter what's going on. I'm like, I'm going to find happiness with whatever I'm doing in my life. So I'm not really too pressed about things that are going on most of the time, whether people like me or not, whether my job's going well or not. Usually things will find a way through, and I just always look at it that way. So yeah, when I do things, I'm not really shy or worried about doing certain things. My daughter's the first time in my life where when she's crying and I don't really know a way of getting her to stop crying in that moment, not having that natural instinct to just like, oh, she's hungry, oh, we need to change her diaper, or she's just lonely or just wants to play or whatever it is. Sometimes they're gassy and you just don't even know, even though you're burping them, maybe you're not burping them the right way. You're patting on the back, the wrong spot of the back. And it was the first time in my life where I've actually felt a bit of insecurity. I mean, I started having doubts of myself, saying that like, I just didn't believe that I could take care of her properly. It would keep me up at night. And to this day, I still wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares, thinking about my daughter's safety. I'll wake up in the middle of the night screaming her name, looking for her, just thinking she's in danger all the time. Just because like, I don't feel like I'm able to take care of her sometimes. Which is kind of preposterous. Like, I should know better by now. But still, man, it's just that they have that kind of effect overview of we're not sure what to do when we're around them. But you actually have to live that of like, I'm literally not even allowed to test that. It's insane, man. That is insane.
For me, I admit, at least first couple months, I was full of confidence. I was feeding her all the time, changing her. I mean, I still do that, don't get me wrong. Right. But early on, it was heavily more so towards me. Because Lex, after the pregnancy and postpartum, she was struggling with postpartum depression, which they predicted would be terrible for her.
It's rough, man.
And it is postpartum rage. So she was heavily struggling. So I kind of really had to step up and not only be.
Were your seizures still set aside at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Early on.
Okay.
So not only did I have to step up, you know, for her, I had to step up now and have, you know, with Ellie. So right off the rip, I learned how to change diapers, make bottles. I learned how to do everything. And then I was always just like one step of the game. Like, say at night, I had two or three pre-poured, just water, of course, not the formula. Because, you know, for people that don't know, once you pour the formula, you have an hour to give it to the baby before it's useless now.
Yep. It spoils very fast. Drink it now or forever hold your peace.
But for those that are looking to be new fathers or have kids on the way, definitely pre-pour the water at night before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. It's a genius idea. It'll save you some time.
We'd have about 3 or 4 bottles just set aside with water.
Yes, that's what I would do as well.
With the distilled water that you're supposed to use.
Yes, distilled. You can also use purified, but it has to be purified with reverse osmosis, I learned. Speaking of which, that sucks now.
Pick up. Yeah, no problem. We can cut whenever. So, where were we?
Talking about the process of becoming a father. So, yeah, the first few weeks, I kind of really had to step up to the plate and kind of help Lex through her postpartum. And it wasn't only just the postpartum, but Lex never got the opportunity to rest either. Because every day for 16 days straight, we were back and forth from the hospital, back and forth from the hospital, just driving back
and
forth.
So how long again did you start having seizures from after she was born?
So she was born May 2nd. It was a few months after. I know my last one was October 30th. So I want to say in like...
4 or 5 months?
Yeah, I want to say in like October, September-ish. You know, when we talked to the doctor, my new neurologist and stuff like that, that's when we kind of got the news of like no more work, no more driving. And
but here's the thing, but this is a journey now, right? This is, and it's tough for you. You're just not going to see it. No matter how many times your family tells you, or even if I tell you now, you're not going to see this until like later on, right? But I still have to say it. It's that this is a process, right? And like Lex is not going to see it that way. Lex is going
to. She doesn't at all.
No. She knows that you're her rock.
She says it's not like you're lazy. You've always worked. It's that you have actual health issues.
You have to take care of your health. You need time to make sure that you figure out what's going on with your body. Because if you push yourself and things get worse, then really the only one who's going to be hurt is actually not the only one. You are going to get hurt. Lex is going to get hurt, and especially Ellie. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, like even if you don't see it now, you have to figure out, okay, if I'm not working now, maybe the best thing to do is figure out what can you do while you're here, right? While you're not working, what can you work on, right? Maybe it's mental health, right? Maybe it's physical health, and just try to figure out if you can fill in gaps where you're not just sitting around, because that's going to drive you crazy.
And that's the one thing that I will say, it's definitely helped me in fatherhood of being able to be there with Ellie a lot. It's definitely helped me learn more and quicker.
Okay, because you're getting a lot of time with her.
Yes.
Right. Because I only get...
Like I said, not alone time, but it's like...
Still, you're there.
Whenever I need to take care of her, I don't need help. Like,
right. They're like there.
Sit there and watch.
Yeah, they're there. They're around. They're around the corner. But
she could have a total blowout diaper. She could be screaming and crying, and nobody knows what's going on.
And so you're up all night with her. Like if she's up at night, you're getting up. You're helping.
Yes, and it's like, okay, these are things that I'm prepared for. Total blowout diaper. Okay, let's get you changed. Let's get you a bath.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like that's the one thing that I'm confident in. It's like I'm able to do things and I don't need help.
So, like you said, there's always a bright side to it. The fact that you're able to spend more time with her. And these are moments that, although you might feel like you're not be able to take care of your family, the biggest thing is that you're going to look back in these moments like, wow, I got to see every single second. Because, like, unfortunately, there's people out there who don't get to do that. Like, you know,
don't care.
You know, don't care to, of course. But, you know me, like, I spend every day off with my daughter. But because she doesn't live with me, I only get to see her on my days off.
Yeah.
You know, so I see my daughter twice, sometimes 3 times a week if I'm able to get out early and go rush over to my mom's house if she has her, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not like boohoo or anything. Like, you know, I have a good life, you know. Things are working out. Me and my daughter's mom have worked out through a lot of issues and able to co-parent effectively. But, like, to be honest, I've always wanted that moment of being able to help out, be up at night. I enjoy, even though it's stressful and it's a lot to take in and, like, sometimes I felt like the world was crushing in on me, I miss being able to do that. You know, going to bed alone every night in this house, it's actually kind of, when you had your mindset that you were going to have a family and you worked your whole life to achieve that, and now that you don't have it, it's like, what was it all for? Right? Yeah. That's how I genuinely feel about a lot of my accomplishments I've ever done in my life before, right? The house, the education, everything that I've done right in my life that's led me to be able to be a pretty self-sustainable or whatever. none of it matters. I'm realizing that now. You know, so like this is why this even exists, right? Whether this goes somewhere or not, I don't know. Honestly, I'll be happy even if this never makes a single dime. Honestly, just sitting here and talking to you guys, all of our friends who, like, a bunch of our friends who got dad, who are like now dads. Some of us a few years before, some of us who are still kids are on the way. Yeah. Wait till she starts moving, man. She's gonna be a runner. You're gonna have to keep an eye on her.
Nah, yeah, she's gonna be gone.
That's what I do now. If I'm taking my daughter somewhere, if I sit her down for a second,
and I might get her one of them kid harnesses. I ain't gonna lie.
No, please don't.
I never thought I'd say that or do that. But with the way she acts, now she might be getting a kid harness. Ellie, if you see this 10 years from now, just know that I've contemplated getting you a kid harness. And you'll know whether you got.
If he actually went through with it, then you see where. I've never wanted to do that. I've never done it myself. But I do know that my mom has done it with my daughter before. Like when she's out. She put her in a harness when she was out taking her shopping. And she's just sending me pictures. And I'm like, is that my daughter on a harness? Like what do you got right now? She also used to take her out there and try to get her to walk before she was actually able to walk. And she would have these things that would hook up. Like it's like a little crossbar that would hook up to like a harness around her that you hold above to kind of keep her standing up. Uh-huh. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, she kind of looks like a marionette doll. Like the ones where she's controlling the arms and legs. I was like, what are you doing to my daughter? I'm like pretty close to banning her from going to the store with my mom now. Because I'm going to expose you, Mom. I'm exposing you out right now. The other day, she takes my daughter to Walmart. And I say the other day, this was probably a few months ago, but she takes my daughter to Walmart. She's in a cleaning aisle and she looks away for 1 second and Jolene takes a bottle, throws it on the floor, and now there's detergent everywhere on the floor.
Yeah, that's one thing with Ellie. Anything that she can grab, she will grab.
Yep, she grabs.
And she doesn't like necessarily put it in her mouth. She'll grab it and she'll throw it. And I'm shocked at how hard she could throw something for a 7-month-old. Jeez. Like, there's times that she whips shit. Like, she just grabs it and just whips it. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how did you... Like, how strong are you?
So
I make her do sit-ups. I hold my fingers and I pull
sit-ups?
Her up. Yeah,
baby
I pull
sit-ups?
Her up like that. Lex does stretches with her every day where she stretches her, and then I do sit-ups where she holds my fingers and I just boop.
Pull her up?
Boop.
She's going to be swole when she gets older.
Boop. I already told Lex she's going into some form of martial arts. I mean, all my years that I did Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu and boxing, I told Lex that she doesn't have to have the mentality of me where she wanted to compete, like how I wanted to compete in my teenage years.
Yeah.
But she's doing something. That she's going to be able to defend herself. She's not going to be one of those girls slapping and pulling hair and shit like that. She's going to be throwing punches, knees, kicks, and elbows. Or she's going to choke you unconscious.
You don't want her competing?
If she wants
to, UFC
yes.
fighters are starting to get paid.
If she wants to compete, yes.
Especially from, like, what, another 20 years from now when she's actually at an age where she can compete?
Yes. Salaries are going to be changed. If she wants to, I will support it. But I'm saying she doesn't have to. That's her choice.
Fair enough. But you want her to.
Kind of yes and kind of no.
Show them what my bloodline... Show them what I could have been.
Because I know how hard it was in my body. Like, when I blew out my knee and I knew I was done for, at 18 years old, I already have a blown out knee. Mm. I've torn almost every tendon in my knee at 18 years old.
Yeah. Definitely tough.
And
then was that during a match or was that just sparring? Or
it was during a sparring session. Wow. I shot for a shitty takedown and tried to force it. And when I turned the corner on the takedown, I was dragging my foot and I didn't push off. So when I turned the corner for the takedown, my leg didn't come with me and I collapsed on my knee.
That sounds so painful.
And the messed up part about it was at first, I still had adrenaline going. I thought it was just like a pulled muscle. So my coach was like, hey, you want to finish your bag work and then do some pad work and then you're good, done for the day? I was like, yeah, sure. And when I went to go do my bag work, all I threw was punches. I didn't throw any kicks at all.
Did you already feel the pain?
At that time, I was still kind of in the zone of like
adrenaline pumping through you. Yeah.
Okay. But I was like, let me just take a break. I'll just throw punches. Then when I went to go do my pad work, he signaled for me to throw a left high kick. And when I went to go throw the high kick, my knee gave out and I rolled on my ankle. And I fell down. He asked me, he's like, you okay? I was like, I can't move my leg. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, what do you mean? What do I mean? I can't move my leg. I ended up tearing my ankle, tearing my knee. I was in a full leg immobilizer from about here, my thigh, all the way down to my ankle, and then an air cast on my ankle for about four months.
So you have, and I've known this for a long time, but you have like the most broken body of any man I've ever met in my life. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Have you watched Jackass? They got me beat. Steve-O from Jackass definitely has me beat.
All right, outside of professionals, every story you tell me is just of something of your body breaking down on you.
It hasn't been kind to me. My body has not been kind.
Have you thought of replacing it?
Yes.
It's still
unfortunately, the technology is not advanced yet.
Essence transfer?
Yeah, put me in like an AI body or something. Put me in a robotic body. Make me look like a young Mike Tyson.
I don't think the world's ready for that.
No.
We don't need another Mike Tyson running around. Because I feel like...
Because I will bite somebody's ear off. I will. I don't blame him for doing it. I think he was on the right for doing it. Things weren't going well. He was losing. He said he was getting headbutted. You know what? I accept the earbite. I don't think he was actually getting headbutted that bad, but if I'm losing a fight, I'm biting somebody's ear. If I'm losing the fight, I'm biting you anywhere. I don't care.
Whatever's near me, I'm biting.
If I gotta bite your balls, I'm biting your balls, bro. Like you're not going home happy. I can tell you this, at the current shape I'm in, I'm nowhere near what I was in like my teenage years.
Okay.
I definitely believe that the 18-year-old version of me could beat the shit out of the current version of me.
Yeah.
But that being said, if anyone tries to fight me today, I promise you, even if you win, you're not going home happy. You're not going home. You're not going to go home feeling like, yes, I feel great. I'm definitely either like trying to gouge your eye or bite you or something. You might beat the shit out of me, but you're not going home a happy person. You're going home with a chunk of skin missing or an eye poked up, bled up. Or I might just shoot you. I'm not in great shape anymore. I mean, I used to be able to run 5-6 miles, feel great, do my road work, return to the gym, spar, do different things, or even do my road work after. I used to do the polar runs.
So let's talk about that. What got you into fighting?
I got into my first fight in kindergarten. And fun fact, in that fight, I bit a chunk out of the kid. It was in East Cleveland. It was in a ghetto-ass school. A group of kids tried to jump me, and I ended up biting a chunk out of one of those kids, and it unlocked some kind of weird adrenaline in me. And then after that, I just enjoyed the adrenaline of fighting through elementary school, middle school, high school. I just enjoyed it. Win, lose, or draw, I just enjoyed the adrenaline rush of it.
So, okay, so you enjoyed the adrenaline. You really enjoyed the fighting. But at what point did you start to try to take it serious?
When I was like 12, 13.
That seems young to me. Is that young for that type of sport?
Honestly, at this point, that's what a lot of kids are starting now.
Really?
You have to start younger now because some of these kids are starting at a young age. Like when I was at the gym... Our jiu-jitsu coach, I won't name names, but our jiu-jitsu coach, he did win worlds at Naga and at IBJJF. I'm not going to name names, but he did win worlds in his division in black belt. He didn't win an absolute, but he won in his division in black belt.
Okay.
Absolute is where they bring all the winners from all the divisions, and you face off against each other.
About different weight divisions?
Every weight division, you face off against each other to determine who is the true. His trainer, my trainers, my jiu-jitsu coach, he won absolute twice.
Wow.
and it's, worlds like
are they times. Okay, so that just seems like naturally the bigger guys are going to win, or is that
I might just be sometimes not always. Wow. Because his coach was a heavyweight, and out of seven times in the absolute division, he won twice.
Okay,
but that's still like your two time like world champion of like
that's insane
highest level jiu-jitsu.
So at that point, yeah, there's no one more fit to win jiu-jitsu. Like he's the pinnacle. You
get like Ryan Gordon or something like that, who's just a jiu-jitsu god. I mean, sure, Ryan Gordon's roided up all to hell, which I respect him. You know, if you want to do steroids, they're not illegal in jiu-jitsu or in the competitions you compete in. Go ahead, do steroids. I don't care.
Is it not illegal in jiu-jitsu?
I don't know, because he's roided to
shit. I don't know, but he is, so it must be legal.
Because when I was competing in jiu-jitsu, I was a teenager. There was no roids. I wasn't competing against roided up adults. That's not true, because I did actually try absolute at, what was I at the time? Blue belt level. I did an absolute, and I ended up going against, like, a 37-year-old man, and I was, like, 15. Yeah, it was not good.
That's allowed in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
That's assault. That's just straight. No. I'm sorry. That's battery. That's straight battery.
He caught me with a flying triangle. Off-rip flying triangle. Never saw it coming. He was not a blue belt. I don't know what he was doing in that class, but so he said, needed to be upgraded a belt or two. All
right. So you said 12, 11 is when you start. Do you just pay for classes, or is it you're scouted out by someone who just sees
it's like a monthly training?
Okay.
But when I started...
You go once a month?
No.
Or you pay once a month?
You pay for a monthly training.
You pay for a monthly training.
And I went 5 days a week.
When you were like 12 or 11, 12, 13, this is when you're doing this.
I started at 12 officially.
12 years old.
But when I was about 13 years old, I lost a fight, and that's when I really started taking it seriously.
Okay.
I lost a fight against another kid, not even a professional fighter.
Another 13-year-old kid?
Actually, in high school, I lost to a 17-year-old kid when I was like 13.
Okay.
And so, that's when I was like, okay, I got to stop.
Was he the same weight as you? Or same?
Yeah. Close to the same size as me.
They still a lot. That seems...
This wasn't a sanction. This was just two high school kids fighting. He was just like a senior, and I was like a freshman.
Just some guy from the school that pissed you off? Or,
yeah.
Okay, so then you lose that fight because you're 13 years old, losing to like a 17-year-old, right?
Yes.
Okay, and that's something inside of you triggered. You're like, never again?
Yes, because at the same time, one of the reasons I lost was I was just too cocky. I did not take it seriously. At the time, I had been a year into training in full MMA, so jiu-jitsu, boxing, Muay Thai. I wasn't wrestling heavy, and I admit my boxing was like mid-tier.
Okay.
I was more so focused on Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay.
I used a lot of clinch work because I wasn't like a good wrestler. I didn't shoot for single legs and double legs and stuff like that.
Okay.
I used clinch work, throwing knees, elbows, little punches on the inside. And then if I wanted to go for takedowns, I would either pull guard and sweep someone, or I would get little trip takedowns, like little trips.
Okay.
So, I was not.
So you're playing. Blown. You're playing close to people,
yeah.
And that's just what stuck for you, right? Did your coaches ever tell you that that's probably what's best for you and your style?
Yes.
Okay, so they're the ones that put you onto that.
Plus, they expected me because when I started, I was the only kid at the fucking gym. Like they straight told me, like, yeah, we only have adults here, so it's like if you want to train, you're gonna have to train with the adults, and they're not gonna take it easy on you because they're also here training. So it's not like they're just going to take it easy on you and you're
right.
going to have a fun time and just learn.
Hmm.
It was kind of like, yeah, you're going to get beat up a little bit. And it's funny because my Muay Thai coach, he looked like a slob. But if he head kicked you, you were probably going to the fucking hospital or morgue. If he elbowed you, he was slicing you open. He was a true old school Muay Thai fighter. Like you see a lot of the fighters now where they throw an elbow and they throw it like this and they try to catch you hard.
Yeah.
He used to throw elbows and try to catch people with the tip of his elbow. He was trying to slice your fucking face open.
This is the guy who won.
He was Muay Thai, not Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay.
This was my Muay Thai
coach. Your Muay Thai coach.
So kickboxing. Muay Thai kickboxing.
Okay.
And he would throw kicks from hell. He would kick so hard when I would put, like, the pad on my leg where he would show demonstrations because I would help him teach the class. By the time I was, like, 16 years old, I was helping teach Muay Thai.
So at this point, you've been in, like, three to 4 years.
Yeah, and I was helping him teach the Muay Thai class.
Okay.
And he literally kicked so hard that even with the pad on my leg, and I had good leg conditioning, Like, we would do this thing called Last Man Standing, where one person would start off, and the person would always be me because I was the most advanced at that time for that Muay Thai class. And it would start with two people. You kick each other back and forth until one person gives up. Then the next person in line comes up and goes with the person who won. Kick each other back and forth. Then one person gives up. They go to the back of the line. Next person steps up. Bro, I would go through like 12 people before my legs would literally just give out. He would kick me once full force, and I would be like, God damn. It felt like somebody just swung a fucking baseball bat at my leg.
Did you ever get to fight professionally? Or
I did not.
Okay.
My mom, for one, my main trainer and main coach was a Russian guy, and he wanted me to start at 16. You could start amateurs, and then he wanted me to start in the amateur league at 16 and move up to professionals at 18. My mom, unfortunately, would not sign the contract. She let me compete in jiu-jitsu. She let
but
me
not
do
Muay Thai?
Muay Thai.
Oh, okay.
No, but she never let me compete in full-blown MMA.
Okay. And why?
I don't even know, because it's like I'm doing both separately, yeah, so... Point?
And this is, at this point now, this is like you've already committed. This is like your dream. This is what you wanted to do.
Yes.
You were fully invested in it.
Yes.
And so when did you break your knee?
I was 18, almost 19 years old.
So this is already like 2 years after your coaches wanted to get you into like a little series.
That's actually what I was sparring for, was I was getting ready. I was going to skip.
All these yawns that I'm doing.
I was going to skip past amateurs and just go straight pro and just call it a day.
Okay. So why didn't, what, did you do anything from like the age 16 to beyond?
Just sparring, just like I said, jiu-jitsu tournaments here and there. I have medals and some belts and stuff like that.
Okay.
I have two belts for Muay Thai. I got to compete in a match with somebody, and I actually ended up winning the match within like the first like 45 seconds. And then there was another person who was close.
45 seconds?
Yes.
Did you like knock him out?
Yes.
How? Walk us through it. I want to hear it.
Literally just a simple jab straight right up the middle. Just caught him with a simple jab
just
straight right.
Some guy who wasn't trained?
Probably stupid.
Stupid. And once again, thank you guys for stopping by to the Now We're Dads podcast. Please check out our social medias, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. You know the deal. If you guys are watching the video version, please like and subscribe down below. And while you're down there, please leave a comment and tell us what you guys think of the show so far. If instead you're on the audio version on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any other platform, please rate the show 5 stars to push us up the algorithm. My name is Nazareth, and I'm joined here today with my good friend, Johnny. And finally, now we're dads.